This is Lewis Laffam with The World in Time. My guest is Christopher Krebs, a professor of classics at Harvard University, speaking with us today about one of the world's most dangerous books. The book is the Germania, written by the Roman historian Tacitus in the first century of the Christian era. Nearly 2,000 years later, the Nazi looked to it as if to a Bible justifying their theories of racial supremacy. Before we get to the Third Reich, Christopher, maybe you can begin the story with the Roman Empire and Tacitus.
Cornelius Tacitus wrote the Germania in 98 CE, so we are at the height of the Roman Empire. He himself was one of the leading politicians in Rome, and for reasons that aren't quite clear, took an interest in the Germanic tribes. So those tribes located mostly east of the Rhine River, and produced this booklet, short 25-30 page treatise on the origin and situation and mores of the Germanic people.
What is his purpose? First of all, has he ever been to Germania?
That's a very good question. If he's ever been to the Germania, there's very little in the text that would indicate such a visit. A famous Roman historian of the 20th century said that if Tacitus ever stood on the banks of the River Rhine, there's absolutely no evidence of it. And what we do know is that most of the characteristics that Tacitus attributes to the Germanic peoples are commonplaces, are observations that he culled from previous Greek and Roman writers of ethnographic treatises. So the realistic value of the Germania is really very, very limited.
So it's not a report, it's a essay.
So that's a very good characterization. It's not a report, it's an essay. It has a clear political impetus. So in 98 CE, the incoming Roman emperor was actually not in Rome. He was stationed near the Rhine River. And the Germanic tribes had for almost 200 years, as Tacitus writes himself in the Germania, troubled the Romans and had very successfully protected their own territory and had escaped an integration into the Roman Empire. So there are those who today believe that Tacitus wrote the Germania ultimately because he wanted to encourage the emperor to actually make one more attempt to integrate Germania, the territory, into the Roman Empire.
He also wished to draw a distinction between the fortitude, morality, noble savagery of the Germania with the decadence and the corruption in Rome.
Yeah, that's most certainly one aspect of it, but it's not. For many centuries, people actually read the Germania as if it were a mirror which Tacitus held up to his Roman readers, trying to show to them what they really should be like. But it's not quite as simple as that, because there are many negative characteristics that Tacitus attributes to the Germanic peoples. But there's also the problem that even the positive values that he attributes to them are highly ambivalent. So I personally prefer to read him as using the Germanic tribes to reflect on human values like simplicity, like the striving for liberty, morality. Those are the questions that he's also struggling with in writing about the Germanic tribes.
Okay, so the character that he presents describes some of the ambivalences, some of the positives and negatives. Mention a number of the characteristics.
The core characteristics are their simplicity, their morality, their fortitude, as you mentioned. By and large, also he speaks of their purity, and he speaks of them as being a people like no other, which is interesting because that proved to be a very, very influential paragraph in modern times, would also be very often quoted and interpreted by National Socialist writers, but is, as a matter of fact, one of those commonplaces that had previously been attributed to the Egyptians or another people in the northeast of Europe, the Scythians. So it's one of those examples of Tacitus taking one particular characteristic that he found in the ethnographic tradition, attributing it to the Germanic people, which would then later, several hundreds of years later, taken to be a genuine, real characteristic of the Germanic tribes as the German ancestors.
Tacitus writes this in 98 CE, and then what happens over time to the Germania before it comes back into the intellectual stream in Europe?
So a contemporary of Tacitus had promised him that he would be immortal. And by saying you will be immortal, he meant that his works and therefore Tacitus the writer would be immortal. But it didn't really look all that good for many subsequent centuries. We have very, very little evidence of readers and writers using Tacitus. There's one very famous and extensive usage of the Germania during the Carolingian Renaissance, but then there's another period of 500-600 years of silence, pretty much, until in the early 15th century, more specifically in the 1420s, word reaches Italy that there are previously unknown works of Tacitus hidden and to be found in Germany. So for almost 1300 years, we hear very, very little about Tacitus Germania.
All right, and now it's discovered by Italian humanists, mm-hmm. as you say, in the 15th century. And mm-hmm. what do they make of it? And does it become a almost sacred text?
First of all, it takes a while for them to actually get it to Rome. It's a very interesting, almost detective story, because we have the humanists' correspondence, we have their letters, we hear that they heard about the Germania and that they are negotiating with a German monk to get the manuscript to Rome. But for three decades actually, very, very little happens, and we are ultimately not quite sure how the manuscript gets to Rome. But soon after it then reached Italy, it was the text, the Germania, was used by the Cardinal of Siena, Aeneas Silvio Piccolomini, who was in Rome. He had spent more than 2 decades in Germany and was basically the representative of German interests in Rome at the Curia. And there was, the German church was unhappy with Roman politics, were in the early phases of a rebellion, and sent a letter to Aeneas Silvio Piccolomini warning him that there was irritation and a rebellion afoot. And he used that opportunity to produce 3 volumes on the situation in Germany. And in those 3 volumes, he makes extensive, or not extensive use, but he actually uses the Germania so as to depict the Germanic, German past as barbaric. And he quite literally says that your ancestors were basically beasts before they got the benefit of Christianization. So the very first reading, the very first usage of the Germania that we have in modern times is politically motivated. And that is actually the reading that I am mostly interested in, the political and ideological readings of the Germania, as opposed to a philological reading that would merely try to bring out the meaning of the words and would situate the text in its historical context.
So, but the first political and ideological meaning is the one that emphasizes the beastly aspects of the Germans, their drunkenness, their poor food, fur clothes, and so forth.
That's right, yes.
But then the reading that eventually comes down to Nazi Germany in the 30s is an opposite in ideological and political interpretation. And how does that get started, and of what does it consist?
That brings us back to the Germania itself, and when I said that it is a very ambivalent portrait of those Germanic tribes. So Aeneas Silvio Piccolomini simply focused on the negative aspects, on their primitive existence, and that is actually a reading that we will also find repeated throughout the centuries, but it's just not as dominant and as important as the other reading that then culminates into National Socialist ideology. That reading that presented the Germanic tribes as brave, pure, moral warriors is already prepared for in the 15th century as well, because just a few years after Ignazio Piccolomini had written his account of Germany, another Italian delegate to the south of Germany wrote a speech in which he also makes use of the Germania, but he uses the Germania there in order to profile the German ancestors as brave, moral, and pious warriors, hoping to thereby, with that kind of past, motivate contemporary Germans to actually join another crusade.
So it is this reading of the heroic warrior German that makes the Germania a dangerous book. Bring it now into the 19th century. I mean, get to Richard Wagner and the beginning of racial purity in the National Socialism.
It's the German humanists, so around 1500, that profile the Germanic warrior and give the German ancestor his character and those virtues that then will be called upon again and again and again in subsequent centuries. Late 18th and then in the 19th century, that the component of racial purity is added to the mix. And you mentioned Richard Wagner. There are others, Euston Stuart Chamberlain, an English writer who wrote an enormously influential treatise on the foundations of the 19th century. There's a French writer, Arthur de Gobineau, who also used the Germania in a context of a discussion of race and the human races. And it's the 19th century that really brings together the various components that we had in previous centuries. So the moral aspect, the linguistic aspect that we find in the 17th century, then the idea of the spirit of a people that is developed in the 18th century. All of these components then in the course of the 19th century come together in the political movement known as the Völkisch movement, a right-wing pan-German movement that then also swept over into the 20th century and was, as has been well established by German historians, the pool from which then the National Socialist ideology would emerge.
And the most outspoken spokesman on behalf of this ideology is Heinrich Himmler.
Yeah, Heinrich Himmler, I don't know whether he was the most outspoken, but he read the Germania when he was a very young man, only 23 or 24 years old, and on a train ride, he was poor, unemployed, he didn't really know what to do, read the Germania on a train, and penned in his diary the words, "Thus shall we be again," and you can see how he looked at the Germania as a text that would guide him and the Germans towards a better future. Unfortunately, Heinrich Himmler would only 10 years later find himself in a position as the head of the SS, the security squad. He would find himself in a position to actually shape the German future. And many of the ideas that he found in the Germania and that had been used and repeated over centuries before would actually in one way or another make it into flyers, little booklets, manuals, distributed among members of the Hitler Youth, but also among members of the SS.
He recruited SS officers to sort of match the ideal of the Nordic warrior type.
Yeah, that's also a very shocking and revealing aspect of the whole history. So Himmler was, like most National Socialists, hugely influenced by Günther, the National Socialist's race expert on questions of race. And Günther himself had read the Germania repeatedly and quoted from the Germania repeatedly and was maybe the most prominent spokesman for the idea of a Germanic Nordic race. And it is through Günther that these ideas then reach Himmler and then ultimately make it into his outline of what the ideal SS soldier should look like.
Tell the joke in Nazi Germany, given this ideal of Aryan superiority, Nordic purity, compare the physiognomy of Himmler, Hitler, and Goering.
Yeah, the joke was that the ideal German should be as nimble and quick as Goebbels and as slim and trim as Goering and as blonde as Hitler, which the joke brought out the just obvious and blatant discrepancy between the Nordic ideal included in the National Socialist ideology and the looks, the physiology of its leaders.
But it is also from the Germania that the National Socialists, the Nazis, get their notions of racial cleansing, ethnic cleansing, and purifying Germany.
Well, I wouldn't say they get it from the Germania, but we can again see how Günther, the so-called race expert, developed his ideas of cleansing in reading the Germania, because he would give certain passages in the Germania a completely inappropriate and unhistorical interpretation. He would read those passages as if there was already evidence of such a cleansing among Germanic tribes, which is, of course, not true. I mean, if there's anything to be learned from Amos Dangerous' book, so from my book on the history of the Germania, it is that there are readings as well as misreadings in any history of reception of any text. And the Germania in particular suffered from misreadings and misinterpretations.
What is it then that makes a dangerous book?
That's a very good question. And I was a little bit worried about giving the wrong impression with Amos Dangerous' book, because I did not want to give the impression that Tacitus had in any way already conceived of National Socialist ideas, even though there were prominent National Socialists who actually claimed just that. Ultimately, I say in the epilogue that Tacitus himself never wrote a most dangerous book. It is his readers that make it so. His readers with their contemporary interests, anxieties, worries, and dreams that reinterpret the text that he had written in 98 CE so as to fit their needs.
Thank you, Christopher Krebs, for speaking with us today about Rome, Nazi Germany, and a most dangerous book. I'm Lewis Lapham of Lapham's Quarterly for Bloomberg News, copyright Bloomberg 2011.